Welcome to MGO Podcast 10.25, which is mostly about the eternal wisdom of Bobby McFerrin. So, Dave.
Yes, Brian.
The universe is trolling me.
Oh, yeah?
I got an Uber here, as I do sometimes.
Okay.
The Uber driver, like, the first thing it said is he's known for great conversations, which I didn't know that was, like, I usually just, like, type in a star number. It's always five. But, like, I didn't know that there was, like, a great conversations button.
So you can request different things when you get in an Uber?
I don't know if you, I don't know, but he just popped that up. And then I get in the Uber, and he starts off with a conversational gambit, because I live on a dirt road. And he's like, what's this dirt road doing in the middle of Ann Arbor?
It's a fair point.
And I'm like, well, I think it was a township when they paved it. So we're having this conversation about township islands, a moderately diverting discourse. And he just stops talking to me, and he turns on the radio. So one, my Uber conversationalist driver was just like, this guy's hopeless. Let's turn on the oldie station.
I can't talk to him anymore?
He turns on WOMC, the oldie station. And the two songs that I get to hear before my cab ride is over are Don't Worry, Be Happy, which already is like, come on. Really? Are we serious? Is this seriously going on right now?
Maybe you needed some cheering up or some grounding.
And then number two was Eye of the Tiger, which has a famous line about rising up to meet the challenge of our rivals. And I was just like, what is even going on? What, Dave, is going on?
Maybe you should have re-engaged him in conversation.
I felt like...
Maybe the universe is telling you to take the bus.
Oh, they don't run very often on Sundays.
They don't run on Sundays.
Well, I mean, they don't run very often. So, like, I might have to, like, get here an hour early or something.
Well, you could do the prep and set up.
Yeah.
Is that what you pay me for?
Well, also, I have small children who should be around.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. I guess.
All right. Well, but let's get back to what's important.
Okay.
The universe is clearly trolling me.
Has you as a target.
Yeah. I mean, that makes more sense than many other explanations for lots of things.
Of which we will or will not get into?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
So I just feel very trolled this morning.
Maybe it's just a reminder of, hey, you can still be happy.
What?
I don't know. I'm trying to find some sort of explanation as to what you can take away from this unfortunate experience of transporting here.
Well, I can take away a terrible segue, because I'll tell you who's not trolling us.
Okay.
Our sponsors.
They generally don't.
They are Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshore Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, The Residence in Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, Lantana Hummus, and the Phil Klein Insurance Group. So, Michigan loses 75-63 at Breslin, and a kind of extremely similar game to the first.
There were definitely a lot of similarities.
Down to, like, the six-point lead in the second half that Michigan blows as they score about 4 points in 10 minutes over a stretch of the second
Which
half.
Also happened in the first game.
Yes, it did also happen in the first game.
That's a little disconcerting.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's just, why is this happening?
Oh.
Well, okay. No, I'm not asking for an answer, but, like, it makes me think, last night, I'm like, why is this happening? I mean, Michigan has gone through scoring droughts this year, clearly, because they don't shoot the best, and sometimes their offense does get a little janky.
Well, I mean, in the first game, Michigan State switched. In this game, Michigan State switched.
Yeah.
And I think a large part of the problem was that, I mean, I keep telling people that Xavier Tillman is a dude, and he went full, like, Isaiah Roby on Michigan in this game. He had 5 blocks, and every time a guard tried to take him off the dribble, they got either stuffed or they had to put up a really tough shot because he was able to mirror them to the basket. And, like, this is why I keep saying that Michigan State is better without Nick Ward, because you get 33 minutes of Tillman in this game, and he changes their defense so completely that, I mean, I think Michigan wins these games if Nick Ward plays in them.
Well, the two things about Tillman, one, are we did not know if he could go 75% or more of a game, because he's generally been, what, 20, 18 minutes? With one when Ward has been around,
yeah, and they run a lot more effectively, I guess, when they're alternating those two guys. So it's not like this was a really high paced game where Michigan State was pushing it,
right?
And I think that's because they knew that when Kithier came in, they were in trouble.
But the second part about Tillman is a lot of what Ward does is he goes into the post, right?
Right,
and they give him post touches.
Yeah,
okay, that's not necessarily Tillman's game. So if he doesn't have the ball, who has the ball?
Well, Winston.
Exactly. And whose hands would you rather have the ball in? Right. I mean, for Michigan State, I guess you could even say in the Big Ten, but for Michigan State, then Cassius Winston. So you're not only improving some things on the defensive end, like you said, but now you're forcing Winston to be a playmaker even more of the time, which he is clearly very good at.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of mediocre in this game. Like 5 turnovers.
Yeah, he did
7 assists. Like, you know, he was 6 of 12 from the field. He got bailed out on a lot of his drives with some calls that I'm just...
Yeah, that was the first half.
That was the first half, but like that's...
The second half, he beat Z a couple of times, and I was just like, well, not going to do anything about that.
Well, and with Matthews in this game, you didn't have the option of trying to put the larger guy on him to bother him.
And that's kind of what we talked about in the last couple of weeks, is just like they might need to switch those and move Z off the ball and have Matthews check Winston and see if his length bothers him.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, you look at the KenPom like win percentage graph, and it's got like X's when you don't score, and it gives you the score when you do score.
Okay.
So along the like X-axis as time passes. And the thing that just jumps out to me is that Michigan had this 6-minute drought at the end of the first half where they got one bucket, and then they had another drought in the middle of the second half, and the common thing there is that Brestakis was not on the floor for either of those periods.
Right. Well, the first period was an interesting group of players that I don't know if we've seen on the floor together this year.
No. Like the first half auto bench fest where you've got the backcourt of Brooks and Julius and you've got Castleton and Johns in there.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus.
I mean, I don't really... That's like a lineup from 2 years from now.
Yeah, well, and, you know, Michigan State did the same thing. They benched Winston for 7 minutes at the end of the first half. And, I mean, he did finish with 4 fouls, I guess. But, like, the thing is, like, people will come back at me and be like, all right, well, they auto-benched Iggy, but Iggy fouled out, right?
I mean, that is a fact.
So, but how many more minutes did Iggy get because you auto-benched him in the first half? None.
Yeah.
Like... Brestakis was fated to have 18 minutes in this game?
It was not many.
So, like, he's not any more likely to pick up a foul.
22.
At the end of the first half. And, you know, he's checking Arns and, like, Henry and stuff. It's not like he's on Winston.
Oh, he was
consistently.
On Goins, I think, at some point.
Well, so, none of these guys are going to, like, put you in the post and
No. You're right.
So, I still don't agree with putting on Iggy on the bench, especially because he was super hot in the first half.
Oh, man.
And Livers was also out.
Yeah.
So, like, you just have this period where you're up 12 towards the end of the first half, and then you end up going into halftime up 6. And then in the halftime interview, Bilan's like, they say, what do you need to do to get better? And he's like, we need to get Iggy and Livers back on the floor. And I'm like...
Guess who's in charge of that?
Who's in charge of that? And, I mean...
So, the thing about Winston being on the bench and Iggy and Livers that I kept thinking of is, okay, so if you're both... If all those guys are sitting for extended periods of time, they're not in the game, they're not in the flow, they're not really, like, feeling... Like, when they come back, they have to kind of catch up to what's going on in the game. And do you think that it's easier for a point guard to do that than a couple of wings just because you're going to naturally have the ball, you're going to probably have a little more on-ball defense, and so therefore you're going to be able to catch back up to everything that's going on instead of, like, Iggy, who hits a bunch of shots early and then has to sit for, like, what, probably a good 20 minutes of actual time, maybe half an hour of actual time, and then come back and be like, oh, be that spark again that you were.
I don't know. I mean,
that was my kind of thought. It's maybe hot takey, but
it's complete. I can't quantify that. Like, okay. I mean, the other thing is like, so Iggy fouls out, and his second foul is he's just trying to wall up on Winston. He's got his arms up, and he gets his chest in the way of a Winston shot. And how many Michigan chests fouled Winston in this game?
Well,
probably four or five.
There were a few.
Like, he's getting to the line, and like there was a. Like a pick and roll switch where Teske is just not challenging Winston's shot in the second half. And that's because of the way these guys had called the game, and they only called it for one way. So the free throws in this game were 30-7. And it's not like Michigan was just bombing it from outside.
No, they had some takes. Iggy went to the basket and
got knocked over and they're not calling it. And if you breathed on Winston, they were calling it. And Docket just pointed out that like Izzo screaming at the refs the whole time.
Yeah, he was.
And I like people say this that wasn't the reason Michigan lost this game, and I'm like, you have high leverage minutes that go out the window because Teske gets an early foul, because Iggy fouls out, and you don't have Charles Matthews, so you're playing Eli Brooks like 25 minutes in this game, and you're telling me that didn't have enough of an impact to swing it. Like,
well, yeah,
they played badly, but at the same time, like. I don't know if they were allowed to play well. Like, I keep talking about, like, is Michigan allowed to contest vertically? Like, well, it wasn't the case in the Iowa loss at Iowa. It was the case in both Maryland games where they're in position, their arms are vertical, and just because someone puts up an ugly shot doesn't mean you have to blow the whistle. In this game, they were not allowed to contest vertically, and we saw the results of that.
Yeah, I think the answer to that question is sometimes.
I mean,
that's just the way that it is. It's not necessarily ideal or fair. It's just, like, that's why, okay, so this game was what? One of the most hyped regular season games between these two teams ever. Someone mentioned, and they could have been wrong, but they mentioned this is the biggest game ever at Breslin or whatever. And, like, I mean, how were you excited for this game? Like, in the last week or whatever? I mean, is this a game that you, like, you know, we look forward to certain football games.
I was mostly dreading it.
Yes. Well, I was too, and I don't necessarily...
Because I knew this was going to happen.
Right. That's the thing, is that I don't want to be the huge ref complainer, but I just know Michigan gets a lot of fouls when they go to Breslin. They don't necessarily when they play a lot of other games, and they do when they go there, and I mean...
This is the most foul-averse team in the country.
I don't...
Playing a team that cannot generate its own shot except if it's Winston, and we have a 30-7 foul disparity. I mean, free throw disparity.
Free throw.
And it's just like...
Well, it's just that's what you're going to get when you go there pretty much every time. And so you can get excited about a matchup like that. But to me, it's kind of like, well, maybe. Let's see if they play an actual fair basketball game. But, I mean, it's state, man. That's how it goes.
I don't want to just, like, resign myself to the fact that you can't get a fair whistle at the Breslin.
Why?
I mean, I don't know. It just feels like giving up. It's really frustrating.
Well, whistle is not something you can control. Like, can you play well? Can you make shots? Can you run offense? Those are things within your control. And those are things that Michigan did not really do, especially in the second half.
But we're talking about a gap of 0.1 points per possession in a game where Eli Brooks plays 25 minutes and Iggy plays less than that.
Yeah.
And the calls that Iggy suffered, you know, a couple of them were legit. But a couple of them were absolutely ridiculous. Like his fourth foul, where he's trying to contest for a rebound.
Oh, the loose ball?
Yeah, and he doesn't do anything that affects the play, and the ball bounces right to a Michigan State guy, and they call him for a foul when someone else got the rebound. I mean, you see every game that they decline to call loose ball fouls when someone like goes over the back and knocks it out of bounds, and they just call it off that guy. Like, there's no reason in the world to call that loose ball foul. Unless, I don't know.
The one on Foster Lawyer was...
Oh, my God.
Even I was like, okay. I mean, I don't know what... maybe Z held his hand, but...
I don't know.
I feel like that kind of stuff happens. That's like holding in football. If you're going to call...
No, there's no possible justification for that. And
so...
So it's just really frustrating because, you know, occasionally they're able to go in there and overcome playing 8-on-5, but every time they are playing 8-on-5.
Yeah.
And, like, people get on me about this, but it's true. If you don't believe it, watch this game
again.
Well,
the thing that I generally say about it is to win by 2, you got to win by 10. That's just... I mean, you got to play a game that where you would beat a team by 10 in order to win by a possession or two. Yeah. And that's just, that's, you know, that's what Michigan did last year. They won by 10.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is like, you know, you have this situation where this is going on in the second half and you're kind of losing your grip on the game, and X beats Winston clean for a layup, misses it. And then Winston comes down and banks in a three, and you're like, all right, here we go. That was his make from three.
That was his only one, which is, you know, that's what we talked about as a problem spot for Michigan, is like if Winston can get open from three, and he hadn't really in either game. So
no, and
he's a very good three-point shooter.
Right, and so these are the things that, you know, a game can turn on. Do you hit a bunny? Do they bank in a three?
Yeah.
And, like,
I mean, Z wasn't great aside from that. He did have five assists, but I think they were all super early. I'm pretty sure he didn't have one in the second half.
Well, I mean, they're switching all this stuff, and so they turned Michigan into a one-on-one driving team. And, you know, Michigan was able to cope a lot better with that approach when, you know, Walton was the point guard. Because if you put a big on Walton, he's going to be able to pull it from three and hit 40%. Pretty much consistently. So if you're switching and that's the shot you're giving up, like, that's not going to be profitable. Z obviously can't do the same thing.
No.
And some guys he's able to get past and some guys he's not. And then the one time in this game where Michigan was able to, like, rotate it around and dump it down to Teske, they call a ridiculous traveling call on him.
Well, it took them a long time to get that ball in, if you remember correctly.
Yeah, so they are just really bad at feeding the post. And it's because they never, ever do it.
And that's, so now that's kind of something that we could talk about. Like, that's like a...
Were we not talking about?
Well, no, I just I just mean, like, that's something that Michigan probably needed to learn 2 weeks ago, at least.
Well, I'm sure you can practice getting in and in the post, but, like, you can't just learn to do that in 2 weeks.
Well...
Like, if Michigan never, ever feeds the post, are they going to learn to do it in 2 weeks?
I mean, I guess that's a fair point. But then, I mean, why don't teams are just going to be able to do that?
Well, in the past, Michigan has had the shooting where that's
true,
not a great idea.
And I guess they did against Nebraska a little bit. And isn't that when Teske kicked it out to Poole and he hit that three when they collapsed down on him? Because they did feed him and they doubled. Yeah.
I mean, that was... So Michigan State does do a really good job of preventing those entry passes. But, you know, Michigan's got to do more in that department.
Yeah. They look lost in those situations. Like, yeah, they're not sure what to do.
Yeah, they just... can't run their offense, and so it turns into a lot of iso ball, and they don't really have James Harden, so it won't work out that well.
That's true. And also having Matthews not only as a defender, like we said, but just as an extra body would have been game-changing, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if he has 30 minutes in this game, probably putting out more than DeJulius and Brooks did. So, I mean, Brooks had a pretty decent first half. He was good defensively. He hit a three.
Yeah.
He hit a jumper, but... No,
he had a couple steals, I think, because I think Dokic broke down a play where he's chasing the guy along the baseline and then realizes the post entry has a blind spot, and Brooks comes around the other side to double and tips the ball out, and that's when, like, Johns kind of picks it up, and they went the other way.
Yeah, he had a pretty decent run there, but Johns was...
He's just not ready.
Well, he's playing the four, right? They've been playing with the five all year, and he doesn't know what he's doing. He's missing switches. He gives up two free dunks. Like, that was the other part of that stretch at the end of the first half, is not only is Michigan not scoring, but Johns is clearly out of his depth when he's on defense.
And yeah.
So, like...
He looks a little raw in terms of body control, too. He picks up fouls, but he takes a step in situations where, you know, it maybe isn't necessary. He picked up a foul, I think, away from the basket. It's happened enough times this year inside. I mean, my point is, like, it just isn't ready to play, and that's fine.
He
but like,
be playing.
Right? But Michigan's in a situation where, you know, what else are you gonna put on the floor? You move Castle to the four. I mean, they don't have Nunez. I mean, they're running out of guys on the roster.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, it would have been hard for anyone to perform worse in the last two Michigan State games in the limited minutes that they did with Johns.
Yeah,
who's just been a sieve on defense.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a problem. And one that, like, again, when you get back to how this game is called, it hurts Michigan so badly to have, like, two of their only the two of five rotation players available.
Right. Five.
for most of the game. And it's just...
And I think that just kind of becomes the key, is you have five or six guys, and you have a couple other guys you can fit into certain situations, but it's mostly five or six guys, and when a guy gets hurt, when there's foul trouble, I mean, you're just in trouble.
Yep. All right, well, that's enough of that. Let's look to the future.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Is your online store sluggish, outdated, underperforming? You may be suffering from chronic crappy website disorder. One in three online stores built by your brother's friend's nephew currently suffers from chronic crappy website. But now, there's hope. Introducing Human Element. Huel has helped hundreds suffering from CCW to turn their online stores around, creating fast, secure, and engaging online experiences that turn visitors into customers and put products back at the top of their search engine game.
Before Huel, I had abandoned carts, browser errors, and poorly animated GIFs. Now, with Huel, I can focus on what I'm actually good at, running my business.
Jeffrey, would you be a deer and pull the Ferrari around?
Side effects may include increased traffic, customer conversions, better ROI, compliments, elation, and early retirement. Why live with the disappointment of chronic crappy website disorder? Speak to your Human Element consultant today to see if Huel is right for you.
In most good movies, there's a hero and a coach. You are the hero like Luke Skywalker. We are your coach like Yoda. It's Nick Hopwood from
Peak Wealth Management,
your MGO financial coach. Learn more at peakwm.com/MGOblog. I'm the CFP who coaches people just like you. We both hate going to weddings on Michigan football Saturdays. And just like Luke, most of you need a little bit of coaching and guidance. And to qualify as a coach needs to have empathy and authority. Yoda has empathy because he's been battling the Sith for hundreds of years. We have empathy because we've seen people we care about making terrible financial decisions, putting their retirement at risk. Yoda has authority because he's arguably the most powerful Jedi of all time. We have authority because we have an economics degree from Michigan, we are a CFP, we have 20 years in the business, and we manage over $145 million of client assets. And we've seen hundreds of cases. You are the hero, and we are your financial coach. If you're ready for a second opinion about your financial future, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog today.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy. In every life we have some trouble. When you worry, you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry.
So the Big Ten tournament starts on is it Wednesday now?
I think the first round is, right?
Michigan will not play until Friday. Saturday?
Which is nice because the last couple of years they have.
Yes. So they'll get one of Northwestern. It's not going to be Northwestern.
probably not.
Illinois or Iowa. Illinois could maybe do it. Didn't they beat Iowa in the regular season?
Oh, Iowa's had some weird games.
They have. And they're kind of on a skid, and Illinois is upwardly mobile. And I have a strong preference for seeing Illinois if you're Michigan, just because I feel like Iowa is not a good matchup for Michigan, because Iowa's biggest problem is their post defender is awful, and Michigan doesn't post. And they run a lot of zone. And so their offense is not really well suited to exploit the reason that Iowa loses a lot of games.
No. No, and they have a lot of depth, so they're able to cope with things that Michigan is not, as we touched on a little bit.
Sure.
So, and I think they can score in multiple different ways. They're not forced to attack one way or another. I mean, they do have a couple of post guys. They do have a few shooters, and then that Wieskamp guy is just a very good all-around player, I think, especially for a young guy.
Yeah, and then you've got Illinois kind of coming on, but they're still really reliant on transition. So Ayo Dansumu has become more of a half-court player, but he's still far more efficient in transition. And
yeah,
kind of resorts to like just jacking stuff up. And then, you know, their center, Georgie, I'm from Georgia, Behanishvili?
I think so.
Behanishvili. You know, he's kind of a below-the-rim guy who's a got a lot of skill. He's been very good this year, but is not the kind of guy who really does a lot of work against Teske.
No, and I think even Castleton could probably hold his own from what we've seen of Castleton.
Maybe.
He moves his feet well, and he stays vertical, so if you give him verticality, I think
Castleton
be okay.
Might end up under the basket.
Oh, well, as a pogo stick.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can definitely get away with Castleton during the minutes that their backup center gets, but you know, I think that's clearly a better matchup because they're very turnover dependent on defense. Mm-hmm. And Michigan does a good job taking care of the ball. They're mostly a man-to-man team. They depend on transition. Like Dansumu had, what, 15, 16 points in the first half against us?
Yeah, he went off, was super efficient, and then in the second half.
And that was all transition. And then Michigan, you know, refocused in the second half and just shut him off because he wasn't able to do anything in the half court. So clear preference there for rounds. And then in round two for Michigan, they'll get either Purdue or someone. Wisconsin?
It looks like Minnesota. Minnesota looks like they'll probably be the 7 seed.
So Minnesota or Purdue? I mean, obviously you want Minnesota there, but that's probably not going to happen.
No, although it happened last week.
It did.
That was an odd game that I still think kind of was lucky to go Minnesota's way at the end. I thought that it was balling off coffee when it went out of bounds, but
it did. It definitely did.
Maybe twice.
Definitely at the end when it hit his leg. But, so Minnesota is now playing Matt Stockman.
When are you getting his haircut?
Never, but I might get him tattooed on your face.
On my face.
Well, your face would be maybe a sleeve. A Matt Stockman sleeve for you.
Yeah? Okay. I don't know if my arms
are... But it's just like, he's so much better than Eric Curry, and the only reason that Curry wasn't playing is he got hurt again. And he's had 400 possessions, and Minnesota is terrible when he's on the floor.
I mean...
So maybe that's the key.
This is...
It's the thing. You get your center injured, and you're much better.
Well,
Michigan will be an exception to this.
I was going to say, I could think of one team that would not apply to.
But, I'm actually not too scared of Purdue either. I mean, Harms, earlier in the year, you know, right around the time that we played them, I said that he was a disappointment because he had not improved at all from his freshman year. And
yeah,
he gets benched for Trevion Williams, and Williams kind of brings an offensive element that he did not.
Mm-hmm.
And then Harms, he really woke up. Like, that benching, I guess, was a signal to him. And since then, he's been fantastic. So that gives them a different element. But the thing is, like, Carson Edwards has a sub-100 O rating in Big Ten games.
Yeah.
He's, like, at 99.
But I could see that.
And he's started off better, and he's just gone off a cliff where every game he's, like, 7 for 25.
I mean, that's a lot of shots.
It is a lot of shots, but now you've actually got a little bit more surrounding talent that's actually able to produce a little bit.
So how do these guys score that you're talking about? Like, well, Williams, I mean, and Harms, are they guys you dump the ball to? Are they run pick and roll? Like,
well, I mean, so many times you just see Edwards settle for bad shots when he can get in the lane. And even if he shouldn't get a shot off, he can now find Harms maybe, or find Trevion Williams,
sure,
or find Wheeler.
Like just beating a guy off the dribble and dumping it. Okay.
And he just takes all these, and he hits a lot of them, but you know, he has like the worst case of Jordan Poole disease I've ever seen in a game.
Well,
because he can get the shots he gets any time in the clock. Like,
yeah,
there's no reason for him to take that shot with 20 seconds on the shot clock or 15 seconds on the shot clock, because literally it's a shot you can get whenever you want. So if he's going to play like that against Michigan, against Xavier, like, I'm not too worried.
No, I mean, that's the thing that I said is, like, when we were doing prep, I was like, man, I wish we were playing Purdue in the first round. And not because I think that they're not a good team, but I think that the matchup just favors Michigan. I don't, like you said, if unless Edwards has a Big Ten Player of the Year game, I just don't see how they're going to consistently score. And I don't think their defense is as good. I mean, they've dropped to, I think, 30th in KenPom, which is all right. But it's not like Michigan State's defense offers a few more challenges.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, they're... I don't know if I would put Carson Edwards on, like, my all Big Ten first team. I don't think I would.
Not anymore. I think he started that way. But down the second half of the year, he's kind of faded.
Well, he's definitely going to be on there.
Well,
despite the fact that he has a sub 1 point per possession O rating.
Well, yeah. But, you know, people will say he's carrying them through by taking these shots. And
yeah, I think you got to be above...
I mean, do we pay attention to these lists? I mean, I know we talk about them because we kind of have to, but like, how meaningful are they?
Well, I know, not meaningful, but, but Dave, we have to fill time. That's the number one thing about sports talk radio.
Okay.
You have to fill time.
You have to fill time.
That explains everything.
Yeah.
That explains Colin Cowherd.
People just want to listen to something. Just talk. Please just say words, and I will be happy.
What are you supposed to talk about at 6 in the morning? Like, when Ira rolls in and they got 4 hours of show, like, that 6 to 7 hour is
just...
I've never...
Front load a bunch of commercials.
Sometimes they play press conferences, but...
I mean, that's legit.
But, like, I mean, we got to fill time.
Okay. And we're doing that by talking about these Big Ten lists. Okay.
We're doing it by talking about filling time, which is really meta. So I like that.
Oh, the places we will go.
Yeah. Well, who would your first team alt Big Ten be?
It's tough to not put Hap on there, right. but like, Teske has played well. He's just been... I think the Michigan State games are unfortunate for him, because those are probably two of the bigger games of the year. And, you know, did he get 10 shots total? I don't know if he got 10 shots total in both games.
They took away all the roll stuff, and Michigan didn't dump any, wasn't able to get threes up, so.
And, well, he took a couple yesterday, and
the thing did not go well. If you can hurry his threes, obviously that's not going to go well
now. Yeah.
But, so, Hap.
Probably a little more consistent. And, I mean, he's been an all player of the year on KenPom, I think.
Yeah, and his offensive efficiency is at, like, 108 or something.
So. Right. And imagine if he had help.
Right.
You
can put him on as your point guard if you want.
Yeah, but I try not to do that.
All right, that's fine.
I mean, I'm not going to take 5 centers.
Well, but what I'm saying is, now you don't need a point guard.
Now you just have Hap. I think Winston has to be.
All right.
I mean, he's the player of the year.
That kind of goes without saying.
Well, you're asking me who I'm...
Yes, and I'm, like, not disagreeing, so...
After that...
Dun, dun, dun.
So the thing about Michigan is, like, they've had a good year, but they haven't had a player. Their best player is probably Simpson.
Teske or Simpson.
And each one has...
They swing back and forth, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that... It's tough to talk about it in the light of these big games that they haven't played quite as well in.
Yeah.
Whereas you have other players that have. And
well, who's your other guard then? Is it Edwards? Are you taking Edwards over Simpson? I'm not.
You're not?
No.
So you're subscribing to the positionless, we're just taking top 5 guys?
Well, I mean, I guess if you there's a shooting guard out there that would you'd rather have than Simpson, then take the shooting guard.
Yeah.
But who would that be? Geo Baker?
Is Wieskamp good enough to crack it, or is he maybe a second or third team?
I mean, he's got a case.
Yeah.
You could go with him. I mean, they're so bad defensively, though, and he is a part of that.
Can you move, like, Bruno Fernando to the four?
No. I'd say no. Okay. So I would take Fernando over Hap.
I think it depends on the rest of the team, right? I guess if you have Winston that creates, then you have Hap, or you have Fernando finishing. You have to give him help.
Hap's better for Wisconsin, but like if you look at defensively, I don't think there's a contest, right? Like
no, and that's why I said, could you move? You know, State had Jaren Jackson at the four blocking all the shots. Could you do that with
for 20 minutes a game?
Yeah, could you do that with Fernando and just have him?
No, because Jackson had 3-point range and Fernando does not.
So that's true.
Your four's got to be able to shoot, I think.
Okay.
Well, that rules out Jalen Smith. Come on. Got to come up with somebody.
I gave you three.
You gave me three. Come on. You got to keep going. Who's your third?
Well, I said Wieskamp.
Wieskamp? I don't know about that.
Well, okay, you give me a couple then.
All right, well, I'm taking Simpson.
Simpson and Winston.
Simpson and Winston.
Do you play Winston off the ball?
I mean, it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
It's the same.
Wieskamp. Probably. Fernando.
Yeah, Wieskamp. Fernando, I don't know.
This is...
Anybody on Northwestern strike your fancy?
Do they only play against Michigan?
No.
Then no.
I don't know, man. It's tough because like who are you gonna go pick?
I'm not picking anyone on probably Nebraska.
Jordan Murphy.
I mean, maybe I just it like maybe Coffey. Coffey's been a good scorer.
I don't know.
No. The thing about Murphy that we talked about this, we like him as he works real hard, but he's just like I'm gonna run you over and get fouls, and then I'm gonna get offensive rebounds and then miss a lot of free throws.
Yeah,
like that's not a, is that an All Big Ten player?
Maybe this year, like.
But I mean, like, I'm not talking about this year. I just mean in general. Do you go to a guy who plays like that and is like, oh, yeah, put him on the first team?
I mean, Penn State doesn't have anyone. Indiana doesn't have anyone.
I mean, you'd think it wanted. Well, could you move Morgan to the four?
I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe there's only three or four people on the first team All Big Ten.
Yeah, that sounds fair. And then there's a lot of second team All Big Ten players.
There's like 11 guys on the second team and 3 on the first team.
That would make sense for this league, actually.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and cheer you up by talking about hockey. Sorry.
All right.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Oh,
Hey, this is Seth from MGO Blog. Like many of you by now, when it was time to refinance my house, I talked to Matt Demarest in Homesure Lending. Since we had bought only a few years earlier, it was amazing how different the experience was between Matt and our bank. He knows his stuff, gives you and your loan his personal attention, and can shop with different lenders so you're always a priority. We are constantly getting similar feedback from readers who used Homesure Lending when buying or refinancing a house in Michigan. He knows the mortgage industry well, which becomes a big deal when your loan is as complicated as mine was. If you haven't met him yet, he's tailgating this year with his HemGo bus at the Charity Beer Garden on 327 Hoover. And if you're buying or refinancing, reach out to Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com. So Michigan hockey season ends in a disappointing sweep at the hands of Minnesota in a building so empty it could have been hosting an NCAA tournament regional. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And people were like, I asked why this was happening, and people were like, well, the X is sold out.
For the Minnesota State High School Championships.
And I'm like, are there only 15,000 Minnesota fans in existence?
I mean, Minnesota also kind of like backed into hosting. I mean, I think if you ask them before last weekend if they're going to host, nobody's going to say yes because they had, what, a 3-point lead or a 2-point lead. And if Michigan wins a game last weekend or, you know, Penn State wins two, like they go flying by. And I mean, they're probably going to get the 4 is what they were thinking, which, well, I guess is still hosting. Still so hosting. That doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah.
So, yes. But they're also going to miss. Well, they might make the tournament now, depending. But I mean, they haven't looked like they were all year.
I mean, they're on like a 8-10 streak or something. And it's like
they've gotten hotter at the end.
It's like Minnesota hockey. I don't like.
But they've kind of fallen apart. Like when you look at.
I guess, but like Yost was still full when they had horrible teams the last few years.
Well, that doesn't make any sense either.
Well, but like you can't get 6,000 people in the entire city of Minneapolis to come to your game. Like what is going on there?
That's a little odd, yeah.
Like it wasn't just that the building wasn't full. It's that there were literally under 1,000 people at those games.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have an explanation for that. I found it striking like you did, but it's also got to be a little bit weird playing in a really empty building, like just like a practice.
Well, they went to the tournament last year, so they know what that's like.
But they did go to Boston, where there were a lot of people.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it must have been jarring. And so they play a pretty decent game on Saturday.
Friday,
sorry. Friday, and pretty much have a shooting edge throughout the game. And then,
yeah,
and
they
then
played well, and they started to close them down. Michigan started to do the thing where they get a lead in the second period, and then they start shutting off the opponent from getting any sort of looks.
And then they completely fall apart in the third period.
Well, they took a penalty, and that kind of rejuvenated Minnesota, and then...
But they, like, Minnesota has 11 shots going into the third period.
Yeah.
What, 8 minutes into the third period, they've doubled that? And, you know, Michigan gives up odd man rush after odd man rush.
Well, that was the story of, what was it, the first period, I think? Or no, it was late. They gave up, yeah, they were real good. And then in the end, they gave up 4 odd man rushes in the third period.
Yeah.
And it was just like,
Luce doesn't go to the ground on a 2-on-1, and guy just kind of flings it over across the crease and man has no chance, which is a nice thing to say about a goal scored on Michigan this year.
I mean, I thought he was It's hard to say that he wasn't their best player this weekend.
No, I agree with that. Like, this was like kind of the first time I was watching Michigan, and they're giving up a lot of goals for the number of shots that they're giving up, and I'm like, this is not on the goalie.
No. Like, I mean, it was like that Penn State game where it was just odd man rush after odd man rush that they gave up. But, I mean, he played well. I thought, like, he made a bunch of, like you said, you haven't seen Michigan goalies make a bunch of do-or-die saves. I thought he did 10 this weekend, maybe, in between the two games.
And then I have to admit that I was asleep for the first period on a Saturday.
So you woke up and it was 3-0? That had to
be. I was, like, drifting in and out. Like, I'd nod off and I'd wake up and they scored a goal. Oh.
Is it because the game started at a really weird time and you weren't ready to watch hockey?
I don't know why.
It started at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
4 o'clock central, I guess.
I was just sleepy, man. Sometimes that happens.
No, I get that. I just am kind of wondering. I mean, it was nice for Michigan because they had a more prominent basketball game that night. But, like, why is a game starting at 4 o'clock locally? That seems...
I don't know.
I mean, who does that?
It's strange, but I'm not going to... a slightly gift horse.
Like, the things that have been plaguing Michigan all year. I mean, we talk about the goaltending, and yeah, but that's not going to get fixed because either guy's going to play better or he's not. But the things that they can fix are, like, consistency on defense where you see guys... Like, we talked about Friday, they give up 6 odd man rushes, and some of them are just guys getting beaten, some are guys like getting lost, some of them making bad plays, and you're putting goalie in a do or die situation. But also, like, they haven't been great in the zone. They've been good and then they've been bad, and there's like this weird cliff that they just fall off. It's very inconsistent, I think, is the best way to put it. And you see guys, like, sometimes they handle switches, sometimes they pass guys off, sometimes they break the puck out well, and then two shifts later, it's a completely different team. And that's something that, like, I'm not really sure what to do with that.
Well, I mean, I read there's a Yospilt post for the first time in a million.
Oh, I saw that
And he pointed out that Michigan's power play was 19% with Josh Norris on the team.
Yeah.
And 10%, which would be dead last nationally without it.
Well, that's without him. The next point. So we were the defense, but then the power play is...
Well, I mean, they're putting guys out there that have no business being on a power play.
It's probably true to a certain extent.
And I would say, like, literally every person on their top two power plays, except Pastiov, Lockwood, and Hughes, should not be playing.
I think Siccone can.
No.
Okay.
Like he's a guy who is a defensive defenseman who doesn't get up in the play and doesn't really do anything in terms of stick handling or shooting. So he's not a guy who should be on a power play. But they play two defensemen on both their power plays because they don't have any forwards that are worth playing.
And yeah.
It's just a talent issue.
I think, but I agree that there's a talent issue. I just also think that it's just people, they can't get the puck in the zone. They can't get on the same page.
They don't have any talent. Like, if you have one guy who's a threat to have the puck come in the zone, and that's Hughes, then people can focus on Hughes, and your options are usually dumping it or trying to hope that Hughes gets through three sticks.
So if they get a bunch of good players next year, you think their power play will get better? Because, like, last year their power play wasn't great, and they had Marody and Calderon and Hughes and Lockwood. Well, I guess they didn't have Lockwood in the second half of the year. But, I mean, they had better-ish players last year, and it was still the same percentage.
It was not the same percentage.
It was sub 20.
I mean, but it wasn't 10.
Well, okay. I'm talking for the year, so there's going to be 16 on the year or whatever.
Sure. I don't know. It's a vexing issue, and the good news is it's not going to get better next year.
All right. But the other thing, then, is the penalty kill. And I think that's the same thing, is, like, their penalty kill hasn't been great. Like, last year, it was hold on to whatever's around you because their penalty kill is, like, 76% going into the tournament. And this year, it's dropped to, like, 79. And that's...
gone up to 70?
I mean, I guess, but, like, it's they started better. They were in the mid-80s, and it's just kind of come down. And, like, the goal that they gave up on Saturday was, like, Raby was the left point on the power play, and somehow he'd gotten across the slot to the right side next to Van Wy when the pass went across and the shot went in. And, like, those are the kinds of little things that are going to lead to... I mean, that's an easy goal. All you have to do is hit the net. because a goalie's got to come across. It's a one-timer, and you know you have a decent, pretty good shot of scoring because you have no one in front of you. So those are the types of breakdowns that you're like, man, you do that on a penalty kill too often, and you know you better hope to score a lot of goals in this game because you're giving them away.
I can't talk about, you know, penalty kill percentages without talking about the fact that, you know, Lavine has the worst save percentage in the country.
Okay, but I just talked about an instance where he was not on the ice.
I know, but, you know, you go back to those percentages and, like, how much of that is the fact that they did not get acceptable goaltending the whole year?
I think they've left guys wide open a lot.
I don't think you're tracking on the...
I know what you're saying.
The Corsi's demonstrates that. Like,
okay, but that's Corsi, but I also keep track of, like, power play statistics, and I post those on...
Okay, but we're just talking about, like, overall, you know, when you come out of the game, Michigan isn't giving up more shots in the house than their opponents.
No, but I think that, like, their shooting from the house on offense is not the greatest.
No, it's not.
Whereas other teams might be a little better.
Well, that goes back to the talent.
Well, that's true. Maybe the goaltending is a part of the penalty kill. It's just that unless you're going to score a lot of goals, you've got to be good on special teams. You can't have defensive breakdowns. And then when you get opportunities to score, like they had a couple yesterday, Lockwood was in alone and he missed the net and Pasta came in from the side and no one was checking him and he didn't score either.
How is this team supposed to be a defensively responsible team when it plays Hughes for 30 minutes a game? Well, and then has Boca out there.
And that's the part that I just kind of wondered as the year had gone on too, is like, I mean, nobody wants to see mid-90s hockey, but that's what this team needs to do to be successful. You need to pack in around your goalie, you need to play well defensively, and then you need to take chances when you have them, not control the puck and get stretched out and leave everyone hung out to dry.
I mean, okay. It's kind of like asking them to be a different program.
Okay, well, this didn't work. So we could try it again.
Let's talk about that in the next segment.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734
734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693. A mystical quest to the Isle of Tortuga, raven like sway on the ocean breeze.
Yeah, that was kind of weird, but we're back in the club, buying up the bar so the groupies show us love. Motherfucking Iceman, I'm the top gunner, heater on blast, I'm the number one stunner. Watch your girl, cause I ain't your Mr. Nice Guy, more like the meet you, take you home and get your twice guy. All dressed up with nowhere to run, I know I make you feel crazy.
Now back to the good part.
So hockey, whenever you talk about hockey, you kind of have to talk about the clown car that is the recruiting class. it's going to be interesting. So,
I mean, they can't bring everybody, right? I mean,
they will not. They'll defer probably five guys.
I suppose. I mean, the first thing is you don't know who's going. I mean,
well,
three guys we know. Hughes, four. We know. Four.
Norris is going.
You'd have to guess.
And then maybe Pasiov, maybe Martin, maybe
Lockwood. So what's if all of that happens? That's eight.
If all of that happens, they'll bring in their two NTTB guys who are coming in. They have 398s who have to come in, and then they'll bring in Keefuke, Lapointe, and then an eighth guy.
Okay,
but that's not going to happen. I don't think Martin's done enough for a contract. I don't think Pasta's done enough for a contract. I don't think Lockwood has. Like, I think...
So they are juniors, right? And that's kind of that tipping point.
Yeah, if the NHL teams are like, okay, we want this guy on a contract, it's better to get him now because he could be a free agent, pull the guy who plays for the Leafs, Hyman. Yeah. So there's that option if you stay for your senior year. So they might try to head him off at the pass, but I don't know if any of those guys are like, ooh, we need to sign this guy.
I don't know. So I would say Lockwood's probably the highest guy in that list.
Yes.
But I don't know.
So they'll bring in Cam York, who's probably a top 15 pick.
Yes.
And is in that like very offensive defenseman mode. He's the top scorer on the U18s amongst defensemen. So hopefully he'll fill that Hughes role. And honestly, I think there's a lot of Ewing potential here with Quinn Hughes. Like he was even on the season or thereabouts, and that's just not something that you expect from your top defenseman who's a number seven pick in the draft in his second year. And you know, there's that Penn State game that he almost single-handedly lost, and he's like, all right, I'm gonna get better about this. And he did a little bit, but he was also even while Blankenberg was plus 12 ish
yeah
a few games ago.
Blankenberg didn't have the best end of the season, but I think that he has been probably one of the biggest freshman bright spots on this team. He's probably going to be first pair, I would guess, next year. I don't know if they go with Martin, if they get Martin back and Martin loose play, but if you have York and Blankenberg,
they might split those guys up to have a puck handler on the top two games, but he'll definitely be top four.
And then they'd have Summers. So if you get Martin back, you have those five guys.
Yeah,
you got to find another one.
Blankenberg. And they're bringing in a couple guys who look like they might be decent. So one of the 98s is a guy named Keaton Person who was going to go to Tech and flipped and then took two more years in junior.
That's
which is like
a little disconcerting.
It is, but that's the way the game is played these days. And Big Ten tried to stop it or change it, and college hockey freaked out. So I guess this is the way it's going to be. But and he had a big uptick in his scoring. He's only had three penalties all season. So I think he's a guy who might be able to walk in on that bottom pairing and be fine.
Okay.
And then the other guy who I think is definitely coming in is Jacob Semek, who deferred 1 year. His USHL team posted that he had signed a letter of intent, so he's probably coming in. Another guy who had a bit of a points boost but looks more like a regular defensive guy, not an offensive defenseman.
Puck mover or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, he's probably going to be – like one of those two guys is likely – to be the sixth defenseman. The other guy will be the seventh defenseman. I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of split time.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll probably be fine. Those guys will be fine as the bottom pairing guys.
Yeah. This is what, I mean, we talked about this in the last segment, but if the team gets better on defense in terms of just being more consistent in their own zone and being defensively sound, I think that there can be a lot of improvement in that area. And you're saying, like, with Hughes leaving, you're obviously going to lose a lot going forward, and you might lose some big plays or... guy to drive the puck. But if you have guys that grow a little bit, you're going to have some defensively sound players.
Yeah, and the news is less good at forward. Michigan is going to bring in Johnny Beecher, who's on the national team. He's sixth amongst forwards in U18 scoring, which doesn't sound that great, but when the top line is like Hughes and Caulfield, and like this is the most loaded U18 team of all time.
Yeah.
And he's a scoring line player for them. Mm-hmm. So I think he's going to walk onto a scoring line and be pretty decent right away. He's tracking more towards a third round pick instead of a first round pick, which he was thought to be when he committed, but a scoring line player immediately, probably. I mean, most of his scoring this year has been against college teams. So, you know, he should be ready.
Okay.
And then they're bringing in Emil Orval, who's a 20-year-old who just had a hat trick last night. He's in the top 10 in USHL scoring, but he had 11 points in his freshman year at RPI before he decided to leave.
Yeah.
So it's like these guys, sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't. I mean, for Michigan to take him in February and be like, okay, we're going to bring you in, means they feel like they've seen something.
Or they need a guy.
I mean, they don't need a guy.
Well, that's probably true.
Do not need guys. So those two guys, I think, will probably walk onto the scoring lines, but there isn't a lot of immediate help otherwise. So they're going to bring in this 98, Nick Granowitz, and he was in the NAHL last year. He moved to the USHL mid-year and had like 9 points. So they defer him. He goes to the BCHL. He scores a point per game, which is not great for a 20-year-old in the BCHL.
Yeah.
But he makes the second team all-BCHL team over some guys who scored more than he did.
So maybe he was effective in other ways?
Yeah. So maybe he was just a guy who was a main driver of one of their better teams. So he's in-state. And so my assumption for a lot of the in-state guys is they're on light or no money.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like he's in the walk-on-ish category and might be a good fourth liner, or he might be a healthy scratch, but he's not really a scholarship guy.
Okay.
And then, so those are the two forward spots that were vacating being filled. That's Norris and Warren.
Right. And then, I mean, like you always like to talk about Michigan hockey summer. Someone's going to...
Right.
I mean, who knows? It could be a player who is leaving for professional reasons. It could be somebody who just doesn't want to be here. It could be...
Yeah. So in the event of extra attrition, there's two forwards who I think are kind of ahead of the pack.
Okay.
They're both 19. Cal Kefuke deferred and is kind of close to a point per game in the USHL as a 19-year-old. He's 5'8", so he's a guy who might develop a little bit later. He probably should have been brought in this year. I mean, just for whatever offensive pop he could provide.
Yeah.
But I think he'll probably come in if there's any attrition. And then Philippe Lapointe, who's Martin Lapointe's son. And Martin Lapointe now looks like an Eastern European enforcer from a Liam Neeson movie. So let's not mess with him.
Okay.
Unless you're Liam Neeson, then go ahead. For all the Liam Neesons listening to our podcast.
There's probably a lot.
So he had another uptick in the USHL, but realistically, he looks like a third or fourth liner.
Yeah.
So, like, there's not going to be an influx of big-time talent.
Well, I think they have guys that can play on the top couple lines if people stay.
Pasuyov, Lockwood, Beecher.
I think Slaker can play on a top two line.
Orval.
I think those are guys... I mean, I don't know as much about the younger guys, but seeing some of those players this year, they don't not look like top two lines. The problem then is, like, you know, what is the third line look, and do you break them up? Because I think that, you know, Anthony and I were talking about this weekend is, like, something that might have really hurt with that Norris loss. One was obviously losing Josh Norris, but also was when they broke up the Pasta Becker line.
Yeah.
And Becker didn't really do much after that.
No, he didn't.
And Mike Pasta came on a little bit. You saw a little bit of creative movement with him in terms of, like, he had, I think, got a few more assists, found the net a few times. But then that bumped Nick Pasta up to the number one center, and that might not have been his best spot on this team. And so, you know, Norris playing the one and Nick Pasta the two in terms of centers was a lot, I think, better for Michigan. So if, you know, you get a couple guys in next year, they might have six guys you can fit around a top two line. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to be a little positive and a little hopeful with this. It's been a tough few weeks, but
I mean, their fourth line should be outscoring whoever is out against them, like Van Wy, Moyle.
Yeah, that'll move up. That's going to be the fourth line next year. That's going to be probably the third.
All right, yeah, probably
at least.
It was the first line this year.
It was the offense. So, I mean, we talked a little bit about this on the HockeyCast, too. It was really interesting because they'd get offensive zone faceoffs and they'd bring that line in. And it was a good idea because they were so good behind the boards, or behind the net on the boards. They generated a lot of stuff, like kind of old school ram and slam winning battles and then getting the puck to the center. And they had a couple guys that could finish out there. I mean, Moyle started putting the puck in the net from the slot and in the around the crease, and you had a couple drivers of that. And so, you know, that's not a bad line to have out in the offensive zone.
No, I think that they're not going to score enough to, like, be a top two line, but, like,
probably
in terms
not.
Of that should be one of the better third lines in the country, at least the conference.
Especially as they get older. I mean, they're still really young.
Well, sort of.
I mean, in terms of college game experience,
yeah,
had Raby was in his second year, and Van Wy and Moyle were both freshmen, and Moyle probably has a jump in him because he was 18.
That's true.
And also, you know, it'd be nice to see Randall a little bit. Maybe he's another 18-year-old. Like,
yeah,
let a kid who's 18 have a spot if you need a jump in something.
He didn't show me much. Like,
well, you didn't see him much.
He got 20 games, and, like, you know, Van Wy was able to make an impact from the fourth line.
That is true.
So, like, I don't really buy that Randall didn't have the opportunity to, like, show something.
Okay.
So maybe next year, but
well,
so next year it looks like another scuffle. Like, they should be improved.
Yeah.
I mean, really, the thing you're hoping for is the Ewing theory stuff. And hopefully their best player doesn't get knocked out at World Juniors again.
Well, I mean, will they send someone to World Juniors next year?
York. Maybe Beecher.
Yeah.
Probably not Beecher. He might be next year. But, you know, the other Ewing theory thing is, like, you know, Boca was not good this year. And, like, he's a senior, and he's active in the offensive zone, but he's also really irresponsible, like, doing stuff that a freshman shouldn't do. And, like, I don't really know if...
Anthony and I talked about this weekend about how it looked like Ciccone and Boca had both struggled with their gap control. And they would leave shooters a little too much space and kind of put a goalie in a bad position where you have a guy who's kind of defending him, but he's not really closely defending him and there's not a lot of pressure. And, you know, if those guys aren't doing that per se, that would maybe benefit a lot of things.
I don't know. I rely on what Pearson says, and Pearson has, I mean, you usually don't hear this stuff from coaches, but Pearson has basically said flat out, like, we need to get better defense from the goaltender out.
But I don't think those are mutually exclusive, what I'm saying.
I'm not saying they're mutually exclusive, but, like, you know, Anthony's goalie, you know, stick up for his bros.
But, I mean, I see it too, and
I'm not saying that it's perfect, but, like, I mean, they just need someone to stop the puck.
Well, they got it this weekend.
They did, even though they gave up a bunch of goals.
And that's kind of...
Universe trolling me. That's what I'm saying.
Well, we've brought this full circle, Brian.
Yeah. I guess that's a good stopping point.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I'm David Nasternak along with Brian Cook. And if anyone is still listening, no one is still listening to this except, like, maybe my mom. So, hi, Mom.